Good afternoon. I'm Helen Hannigan from the Family Health Initiatives, and I'd like to also point out my colleague Sherry Niestad from the Center for Healthcare Strategies, who's in the front. We are going to be talking this afternoon about an improving birth outcomes initiative that we have been working on since the dawn of man, it feels like, but 2006, bringing together the managed care organizations, managed healthcare organizations for Medicaid in New Jersey, and there are five of them, as well as the state Medicaid agency, the State Department of Health, and all kinds of other people invested in improving birth outcomes. We do not have any financial relationship to disclose at this time. So this project that we began was focused on bringing the managed care organizations together for a quality improvement initiative. And together, they do these regularly in New Jersey and throughout the country through the Center for Healthcare Strategies. And what our plans identified in 2006 was they wanted to look at a collaborative effort at improving prenatal risk assessment, perinatal risk assessment for all pregnant women who are Medicaid eligible. So we began with identifying some communities that were both appropriate and available for this kind of initiative, and looked at Trenton, where there's a large Robert Johnson-funded initiative called Children's Futures that's a collaborative effort, and they had some special funding to work there. And then Medicaid came in along with Center for Healthcare Strategies to identify two other communities, and those are Camden, New Jersey, and New Brunswick. We were working with the providers in those communities that most serve the Medicaid population, and those are Health Start clinics. That's a designation in New Jersey that's overseen by the Health Department and Medicaid. And then also the Maternal and Child Health Consortia, which is a regionalized program that I can tell you more about at another time. So what we determined together was that comprehensive care management was available for high-risk women through Medicaid managed care. And that means a lot of different things, but we also have wraparound services in most of these communities, and the managed care organization is a really excellent way to get high-risk moms and their infants engaged. And the delays in enrollment to both prenatal care and the managed care organizations were shortening our intervention window. And so looking for a way to improve upon the process for getting women enrolled was really a high priority. And one of the areas of intervention was really getting a single and comprehensive risk assessment in place. And also knowing that once we engaged those women in that care, that we were more likely to see a healthy birth outcome. We at least hoped that we would, with all of the resources and efforts in those communities. Our goals were to, as I said, to ensure that pregnant women receive proper and timely risk assessment. When we started, what generally happens is, you know, the medical risk assessments are done from the very beginning, but when it comes to the Medicaid risk assessment for the plan, that's not done until the mom arrives back at the clinic with her card, which can happen at any point in pregnancy, really even up to and after delivery. So we wanted to identify something that would get to the plans immediately upon mom's enrollment, which involves the Board of Social Services and all of the counties. And so we knew that the risk assessments that were getting to the plans were not timely. We wanted to standardize what was being asked for. There were tools, like I said, there are five plans, so five tools with varying length and detail. And so we identified some key things we wanted included in the tool. The four-piece plus, the Ira Chasnoff screening tool, was one of the things that was identified by the group. Actually, Dr. Chasnoff came and presented and really impressed the managed care organizations. We had a statewide initiative in New Jersey already for the four-piece plus, so this was incorporated, and I think a really strong component of the tool. We were looking to reduce the burden to providers, which was really the good sell. When they heard that the plans cared about their administrative burden, that was an amazing incentive and just an endorsement for the plans in our state. This is just our project partners, and it was a pilot project that started in 2006 and has continued really to date. So we're still piloting, but we just keep learning and wanting to expand upon that. So as I said, the four-piece plus was there. We had the single risk assessment tool, which was going to lessen the paperwork and increase efficiency and improve the coordination with referral services. And I'll just briefly describe the process. Now what happens is the plan or the providers fill out the screening tool when the women enter care. They fax it to actually my organization, and we scan it into a data system that through optical reader puts the data out to each of the plans nightly. So we are able to have a single source for all of the information and get it to the plans in a timely fashion through that. And the providers are then hopefully not being burdened with as many follow-up calls from each plan. So this is a kind of a picture of the form, and the the assessment, what the plans really wanted to have at the beginning of the project was one form, which was great, that would be one page and be able to be sent to one fax location. As you can see, it's scannable, which is where all those boxes come from. And as the project has progressed, we've identified that some of those initial goals needed to be adjusted. But what we are now in version 3.0, as I like to call it. We're rolling that out in the next few months, which I'll talk about later. But we have expanded to a two-page form, but we've maintained the other two goals of one form for all five plans and one place to send in. So all of the risk assessments have included, obviously, patient information, pregnancy risk factors, current and prior medical conditions, along with social risk factors and community agency referral information. So we started in nine highly active obstetrical providers in Camden, Trenton, and New Brunswick, and they've all continued to work on this form since December 2006. We had our initial pilot, which was the first two versions of the form, go through April of 2008. At that point, one of the plans, and talking about the real story versus the clean version, one of the plans did decide that their form that they were using in the rest of the state served them better. So at that time, we began planning again. They went back to their form. The other four plans continued to use the PRA form, but we were able to begin in our rolling out in November a form that all five plans are back working on. So that's where our expansion efforts have been focused. What this, in addition to the authorization and all of the things the plans were invested in that really brought them to the QI table, the state identified, and really we credit our state partners with the innovation and ability to see the opportunity for a new data source that is prenatal, that begins, you know, we have our birth certificate, which has some prenatal information on it, but it's generally collected from the medical record. We now have something collected right at entry to prenatal care, and it's not related to billing. It's gathered right at the start, and can be updated when a woman does enroll in a health plan, which is something that we do, which we find to be very helpful to the plans as well as to the quality of the information. We also know in our gut, everyone does, that the presumptive eligibility process in our state doesn't work well for our mothers, that getting enrolled when you arrive at prenatal care, being deemed eligible for Medicaid doesn't mean you're going to get your Medicaid health plan quickly. And this was really an opportunity to quantify that and to show, give the state the opportunity to say, not one woman's having a problem, but we have, you know, a third of the women in our state and in these communities that are not able to get enrolled, that are eligible for Medicaid. We are also linking this data to other available data sets and to community agencies. So in addition to streamlining for the providers the assessment and authorization for payment to the Medicaid health plans, we're also able to use this tool as a referral form for other community services, such as home visiting, nurse family partnership, those other services that are available in our communities. And also linking it to larger state data sets, the birth certificate and the EPSDT results, things like that, are all things that we either have or have plans to link to. So our collaboration in action, as I said, we've already linked to the birth certificate, and I'll be sharing some of that those data with you this afternoon. We are working, the New Jersey Home Visiting Task Forces exist throughout the state in different regions, and they have identified this form as their uniform risk assessment that they'll be taking as a referral form. So again, just streamlining, trying to increase efficiency for all of us. And we're collecting a whole lot of really valuable and relevant information for all of those programs, and just collecting it once really does improve the reliability. And we're looking at also the timeliness of plan enrollment and working with the Board of Social Services and the counties. Medicaid will now have a really strong tool to say, you know, you're running behind, this woman was enrolled at this date, and we can track that. And then really exciting thing for us is that Medicaid is very interested in what are the barriers to care. So in our newest version of the form, which will be available on the Center for Healthcare Strategies website, we are asking questions specifically to mom about why she didn't get to care if she does enroll late. We are looking at issues related to the Board of Social Services, but also other risk factors that may have impeded her entry to care. So what did we expect when we started collecting these data? We really were looking at the plans, our most vital stakeholders, our initial stakeholders who were investing with us in how are we going to do this. And we know that they have assertive prenatal case management services available. They have more resources than the rest of us in the community do. They have cell phones that they can offer to women who are on bed rest. They have transportation. So how do we get the most high-risk moms to them most quickly? and looking at the incentives for the OBs as well as for the MCOs to improve their care management processes. But administratively, I think we've seen some really clear advantages, and the next step is really taking what we're learning about our patient populations and applying that to the way we're delivering care. I'm looking for the outcomes and how we may have an opportunity. What I feel we're really going to see as we look at the data together this afternoon is where there's an opportunity for intervention, and how we can identify at entry to care the women who most need us to do the outreach at every level. So what we've done for these data that this afternoon is look at the prenatal risk assessment screens from 2007, so these are all of the women who are expected to deliver in 2007, and link them with the birth certificate data. We had a wonderful partner at the State Department of Health Statistics, Lakota Cruz, who did that for us. And we identified the mothers as in a Medicaid organization if they were enrolled with any Medicaid care organization during 2007. So we know that some of our moms are enrolled multiple times throughout their pregnancies and the year in different ones. We just identified if they were ever in a plan during their pregnancy. They are identified that way. And they're identified as uninsured if they were never enrolled with a plan. So this will include the women who were presumptively eligible but never became a plan member, which really means that they had fee-for-service Medicaid and didn't have that extra case management offered to them. And the analysis really only became fruitful. We were very surprised to see it was splitting about 50-50 when we looked at the risk factors and other things until we looked at those births that were low birth weight. So we're going to focus most of our time this afternoon on looking at those babies that were born low birth weight. So this is a breakdown of all of our births, and as you see, there were 4,955, almost 9,000, 5,000 births for this time period. And we're seeing, as I mentioned before, pretty equally distributed birth weight. So we have over 90% in both the uninsured and in-plan groups that were born at over 2,500 grams, and then about 10% that were under 2,500 grams. When we look at the risk factors, I wanted to give you one slide that kind of put them all out there, but we will be going specifically into each of the risk factors. And as you can see, I'll talk about each of them that we're looking at. So we ask at the screen, and again, the screen is done generally at entry to care. So that doesn't mean it's in the first trimester. We do have a slide that we'll look at that. The current preterm labor means that the mom has had preterm labor symptoms in this pregnancy. And in that group, we see that 4% of those mothers who were in a plan and reported preterm labor in this pregnancy did end up having a low birth weight baby. We focused really on the risk factors that we know are correlated with low birth weight. Prior low birth weight, again, we're seeing a similar pattern in the relationship of the data. We're seeing 2% difference really between each group, but we think that there's really an opportunity for intervention when we look at those moms who are not in a plan. And given that there is some improved outcome when we look at the women who are in a plan. So just looking at the preterm birth there, I think this is the one where I see the biggest opportunity, where we have 1% of our births to uninsured mothers who had current preterm labor that did have a normal birth weight baby in this pregnancy. So that's really a small group of women where I believe there are resources that in New Jersey we can, in our communities and at the state level, devote. That's not a lot of women that we could be intervening with. So we're really seeing a significant difference, I think, once we are able to play more with this information and find out more about these moms, know where there's opportunities for intervention lie. When you look at prior low birth weight, again, as I mentioned, we see a similar difference between the normal birth weight and low birth weight infants, but we are seeing more low birth weight infants born to the uninsured moms when we look at this risk factor. So this is something we anticipate. As we look at these data, certainly was something the plans anticipated. They do often, as we're in these discussions, consider their moms in the highest risk category. So we are seeing the opportunity for the community resources and for the Medicaid resources that are not tied in the plans to really look at how we can design programs for moms where we have identified risk factors from previous pregnancies. Here we have the prior loss risk factors we know is another good indicator for a future loss or low birth weight. And again, we're seeing higher numbers, but similar differences in the rates between the two groups, the uninsured and the insured group. We wanted to take a look at, for the low birth weight moms, when did they get to care? And here I think you see some really dramatic differences between the moms who were in a plan and not in a plan and when they initiated care. And this we know at our community level is a belief that without insurance, I shouldn't go for care. That's really within our eligible community that we see a high disincentive of being uninsured and not going to care early. And I think that's where you're seeing the difference between the higher rates of second trimester entry for the uninsured and than you do for those women in a plan. And then we also looked at the adequacy issues. So women who had more than 9 visits versus women who had fewer than 9 visits, we are seeing far too many women having fewer than 9 visits during their pregnancy. Now, this was based on birth certificate, therefore self-reported number of visits. So usually we would see that over-reporting. We would see moms saying they had more visits, not really differentiating ultrasound visits from prenatal care visits. And here we're seeing a tremendous number of women who are having fewer than 9 visits during their entire pregnancy. This is, of course, of the low birth weight moms, only 334 moms. And so I just want to go over a few of our future plans since we're short on time. We have the third version of the form out for training. We have all of the Medicaid plans back using the form, and we are linking with other state electronic health data, and we are expanding to additional communities in 2009. To learn more about our project, this is our website, and here is our contact information. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Helen. That was not only an interesting presentation, but those were pretty slides. Only I kept thinking that bars were boys and girls. Because